George Corson was a collector of traditional tunes from the anthracite coal fields, and he arranged for Jerry Byrne to do some singing at Buck Run in 1946. And one of the pieces Byrne sang was titled When the Breaker Starts Up Full Time. Here's what Corson tells us. The coal breaker, a straggling hulk of a building, is the most characteristic feature of the anthracite landscape. It is there that the amorphous lumps which the miner has extracted from the seam are cleansed and cracked into standard sizes for the market. Standing close to the mouth of a mine slope or shaft, it frequently may be found hugging a hillside. Almost from the time that the first breaker cast its shadow, miners have invested it with symbolical significance. When the breaker starts up full time, catches the mining folk in a happy mood. After the prolonged unemployment, the miners hear a rumor that their breaker is to resume production. All the good things sung of in the ballad represent so much wishful thinking, though, because in the 1880s, when the ballad appeared, luxuries were beyond reach even when the mines were working full time. That from George Corson in Minstrels of the Mine Patch.
Me troubles are o'er, Mrs. Murphy, for the Dutchman next door told me straight that the breaker start full time on Monday. That's what he told me at any rate. Sure, the boss he told Mickey this morning when he's about to enter the mines that the coal was quite scarce down about New York and the breaker would start on full time. And it's my if the news be true, me store bill's the first thing I'll pay. Ornate parlor suit and this lounge I will buy, and an organ for Bridgie, hooray!
This ballad names Mrs. Murphy, as well as a miner we meet named Mickey. Bridgie, who's due for an organist gift when the breaker starts up full time. There's Jamesy and the ditchman who lives next door, and all the little children. All of these folks and more who depend for their survival on that straggling hulk of a building, the coal breaker. It's not just that artist Sue Hand delights in drawing buildings. There's something about getting the angles and proportions just so that delights her. But it is people, people like Mrs. Murphy and Jamesy and Mickey, who, for her, capture the heart and soul of this region. So while the breakers as buildings may serve as symbols of the anthracite coal industry in the region, Sue Hand has set about commemorating and celebrating the people of anthracite as well in a new series of paintings titled Coal Breaker Communities, Faded Memories. Following some years after she explored the historical events of these coal fields, in a set of hexagonal paintings titled The Anthracite Miners in Their Hollowed Ground. An exhibition of these new works opened yesterday at the Widman Gallery at King's College in Wilkes-Barre and will run through February 15th with an opening reception this Friday. And this Thursday, Sue Hand will present the annual Monsignor John J. Curran Lecture at King's on the images in the show. Sue Hand paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about Coal Breaker Communities' Faded Memories and how the project developed.
I have always loved history. Since I was a little child in elementary school, I've always loved history. I mean, my love is landscape painting. And I became interested when I did the hexagons. I realized I grew up in this area, but I really didn't understand what I wanted to understand about anthracite coal mining history. So I saw actually an art show in Maine, on the coast of Maine, at the Farnsworth Museum. And they had a show, and it was a bunch of squares put together, and they were all black and brown. And I loved that concept. Just, it was very abstract, kind of like Franz Klein, and he grew up I mean, he didn't grow up here, but he was born in Wilkes-Barre. And he's my favorite abstract expressionist. So I decided to do something like that. And that's how the hexagons were born. Because squares are solid and they're balanced. But the hexagons weren't. We put them on point. So because the coal mines were not, they were not balanced. They were, everything was not steady in a coal mine. And so that's why the hexagons happened. After I did that, the hexagons were the most, oh, they were just draining. Learning all that I did about the coal mining history in this northern coal field of Luzerne and Lackawanna, you know, Wyoming and Lackawanna Valleys and Luzerne and Lackawanna County. It was just, oh, the history is just incredible. It was just draining. I can't even think of the word that I want to put into it. So it sort of went underground for a while, like the coal goes underground and then it comes out and shows. And so I didn't do anything for quite a few years. And then I started getting interested again. And at first I was going to do the, I thought about the breakers. I love the breakers. When coal was king, the breakers were sort of like their castle. They were the big buildings that everybody could see and sort of relate to, because the collieries were just sort of like their campus. They were just everything else that belonged to the breaker. The breaker you could really see. But there were lots of people that were affected by the breakers besides the miners and the breaker boys and the people who worked in the breakers. There were the family members, you know, male and female. There were the shopkeepers, you know, just everybody in the community that lived around them. They were affected by the breakers too. So I decided to do a series of breakers with the people that lived in that area. And they were male and female, old and young, rich and poor. And so I started borrowing photographs from friends and my students. And a friend of mine, Joe Husty, gave me a lot of photographs of old breakers that I could work from. And at first I was going to do it in charcoal, thinking I could do lift outs or rub outs with a charcoal. And charcoal was dirty, sort of like the coal was dirty. So I could really get into it. But I'm one of those people that dry media just makes my teeth itch. So I thought, what am I going to do? So it took me about a year and a half. And I literally woke up in the middle of the night one night. And I thought, acrylic. I can do it in layers of acrylic, thin acrylic. So it looks like watercolor, but it's not watercolor. And I can glaze like 30 or 40 layers, almost like the coal is in layers. And that's what happened.
What's the range of colors in these works? What's the palette?
Oh, it's very limited. I used acrylic paint, Liquitex, heavy body, comes in tubes. And I used burnt umber and red oxide and yellow oxide. I did use black, and I used some like a Naples yellow, and that was it. And I forgot I did use blues. I did use ultramarine blue and phthalo blue.
When did you start, and are you still working on these?
There's still more I want to do. I started about a year ago because, like I said, I woke up in the middle of the night with this idea, and I just had to do it. I had to start it. So I had two or three of them finished, and I really enjoy Anthracite Heritage Month. I enjoy the programs that these people put together, these historians, and just people who are really, really interested in our history. And so I had gone to one last year down in Plymouth, and Steve Conrad was the lecturer, and he was wonderful. And I saw Bob Walensky there. And Bob, you know, I've known him, I knew his brother well, and I said, Bob, you just have to see my new series. I'm so excited about it. It's these breakers, and I'm doing the people, and I'm doing the memories, because the breakers are gone, and most of these people are gone. And I'm so excited. I want you to see him. And he said, oh, that's great. You can do a presentation next year. And I said, no. I'm only going to do about 10 paintings. And I don't know anything about the breakers. I just like the way they look, just from an artistic point of view. And he said, no, we're going to have you do a presentation. So a year later, I've done 62 breakers. And I've learned a lot about them and done the people. And it's been a wonderful journey.
And you just mentioned these people who were so much a part and affected
right.
by all of this,
right.
the universe around these. So these are portraits of real people.
Real people. All the people in there are real. Now, they're surrealistic in that the people aren't the right size for the breakers. Some of them look like they're floating in air and in space or behind or around or in front. So, because surrealism is real things in unreal situations visually. But they look very, I mean, when you see them, you see the breakers, you see the people, and they're all different sizes. But some are behind, some are in front. They're not related to each other specifically, except through the glazes of color. And the glazes of color, I tried to pull the whole thing together that way, that the breakers are more warm and spotlighted, and then the people are cooler, and they're, because they were the supporting, because the breakers were my subject. But every single person in those paintings, every single painting is a real person who lived and breathed the coal dust and the air, the coal air of this area.
Did you do documentation? If you knew a name, are the names somewhere?
Oh, some I did. And I didn't start soon enough. I would like to go back and document as many as I can, because I was just borrowing photographs from friends and art students. And I didn't write down all the names. So now I would like to go back and take time to do what I would like to do.
The names of the breakers are on them?
On each one, yes. I painted down in the bottom corner of each one the name and the place. Like on the invitation, there's the Alden Breaker on the top, and there's a large portrait in the upper right. And that's actually the grandfather of one of my art students, and he was a breaker boy. He actually lived down in Hazleton, but she lives in New Angola and comes over the Alden Mountain Road to get to my studio. So that's why I put him in Alden, because I didn't do his Hazleton breaker yet. Then I did the Huber, but not from the same direction that I saw it all the time. I had a wonderful old photograph from 1939 when the Huber was built. And so I chose to do it from that angle. And I put a lot of people in who worked at the Huber. They lived in that area their entire lives, you know, these families. And there's some children down in the lower corner, the lower right-hand corner with, you know, mom and grandma and grandpa. But one of those children is now a reporter for the Citizen's Voice. One of those children is Paul Golias.
This is real.
It's real. It's real people who really lived in those places.
And the bottom one?
The bottom one is the Sullivan Trailbreaker. And I loved the Sullivan Trailbreaker because it was there. I mean, I painted at that breaker. I stood there with my easel and painted it many, many times and never, ever got tired of painting it. I painted it as many times as I could before it was demolished. And I believe it was around 96 or 97 when it was demolished. I don't remember the exact date. But on the right-hand side is Lou Pagnotti, who was a coal subcontractor, and he's there with his nephew, James Tedesco. So I painted them into it. And the other people are just, oh, on the left-hand side, there's a young couple who were actually, they stood up for my cousin when he got married, an older and much older cousin, previous generation cousin.
Now, we know that there was nothing fancy about the architecture of the breakers. It was
no.
All practical.
Oh, yes.
But there is something fascinating about those chutes and how they come
yes.
out and the stacking of the floors, right?
Oh, amazingly so. When I looked at them, they're boxes, and they're all these boxes put together and triangles made out of, you know, from these chutes going up and coming down and the crisscross conveyors that were on the one and the back road in Swearsville. And it was just amazing to me. And I love perspective. I love drawing buildings, and I don't know why. To this day, I love drawing buildings. It's just that perspective. And that's another thing. I always drew the breaker first on the paper. The breaker was the first thing that came in. That was my anchor, my goal, my, I don't know, that was my main player on the stage, so to speak. And so when I drew that, I just loved drawing all of those angles. And I found out that they would, you know, if they needed a room, they would just tack another room on. They would just build another. And you look at the photographs of the same breaker in different years, and they look different because they were stacked from a different way, or they'd tear one off and move it around to the other side of the breaker. Now, these weren't the big main rooms. These were the little small rooms. But it was fascinating.
We've talked before at this table, Sue, about synesthesia and how, in your experience, sounds can trigger you to see colors at the same time. Could you put yourself, as you're painting, in a sonic environment, too? Because it must have been a noisy place.
Breakers were extremely noisy. And it's interesting that you pick that up, because as a child, I mean, I was a child in the, you know, the 50s around here in the valley. And when my mother would drive underneath the, you know, some of the breakers or past the Prospect on, you know, down in Wilkes-Barre, or we would drive past some of them. And like the Harry E. in Swordsbury, we'd drive underneath that. And I always shut my eyes because it was just the clanging and banging. And it was so terrifying to me to just, I was so glad when she got out the other side. And it wasn't going to get me or anything, but it was just the noise. And everything would go black and purple and blue and these deep, scary reds. And the synesthesia was there when I was a kid, but I had no idea what it was. I just knew it was there. So they were always frightening to me. The noise of the breakers, not the breakers themselves. They were always fascinating to see them from a distance. It's like, oh, wow, isn't that neat? And when they were quiet, I mean, I had the chance to go up to the very top of the Huber, and it was legal. I was on a guided tour, and it was quiet. It was beautiful. But just to imagine what that must have sounded like when they were actually doing it, the clanging and the banging and the roar of the machinery. Because I can, like I said, I can remember a little bit from my childhood, but wow. So there was some synesthesia in it.
What are your hopes then for this? The show will be up. People will get to see it. And now the hexagons are on display now, most of them
permanent
at King's.
Yes, yes. King's on the Square. It's a permanent display, permanent exhibition behind glass. Jim Burke, who was in the member of the first graduating class there, James Burke, he purchased the whole, you know, what I hadn't sold. He purchased everything from the whole collection and donated it to King's. He was just an eloquent man. He would speak, and he was passionate about coal mining, just totally passionate about it. And when he and I would get together, I could just listen to him for hours and hours and hours. But I learned a lot from Jim Burke. And I wanted to still, again, honor the miners. They were so incredible. They are what put the goodness into our valley, the good things, the tapestry of faith and family and hard work and loyalty. They were all of that. And I wanted to honor them through this. In the hexagons, it was more about the whole story of coal mining. This one is specifically the breakers and the people right around those breakers. Now, there's miners in quite a few of them, you know, pictured. But, of course, they were connected.
When you said 62, that's astonishing.
There's 62 so far. Well, from everything I've read and people I've talked to, there were over 400 in the northern coal field, but not all at once. One would burn down, they'd build another one. That one would burn down, they'd build another one. And back then, you said they were rough buildings. Most of them only took about 6 months to replace. They didn't have building codes like we do today. They would just put them up, bare bones, nothing fancy, no insulation, cold, windy.
So you're going to give a program.
Yes, Thursday the 17th at 7 p.m., and that's going to be in the McGowan School of Business at King's College in the Burke Auditorium. The show will be up in the Widman Gallery and still on King's campus, and that will be up until February 15th. There will be a slideshow. So the slideshow will have a visual of every single painting, but I can't fit 62 paintings into the Widman. So if you want to see them all, you have to come to the lecture.
When push comes to shove then, Sue, what are some of the things that you've come away with immersing yourself in this project?
Oh, goodness. I was just fascinated. And the fascination of the stories, I think, and everything I learned about the breakers. You know, some of them blew down in windstorms. I mean, they weren't that stable. A lot of them burned. And they were just demolished, blown up with dynamite by the company because they wanted to replace them. So it was just the fascination of what I've learned and just the friends I've made in the anthracite community. You know, like Joe Husty is just a walking encyclopedia, and Carl Orchowski from up in the Old Forge area, you know, gave me a lot of photographs from up there and knowledge. And Frank Avina, he's down in the Makanaqua area, the West End. So that would be the Makanaqua and Shikshini area. And just now I go around, and I'm just driving here today. I said, I wonder what breaker was there, because there was something there. There were pieces of coal, and you could see the mounds, and you could see the open spaces where nothing's been built yet. And I thought, I know there was something here. I know it.
artist Sue Han, speaking with us about Coal Breaker Communities, Faded Memories, an exhibition at the Widman Gallery at King's College in Wilkes-Barre, running now to February 15th in observance of Anthracite Mining Heritage Month. A reception will be held in the Widman Gallery at the Sheehy Farmer Campus Center on the King's Campus this Friday, January 18th from 6 to 8 p.m. It's free and open to the public. Gallery hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Sue Han will present the annual Monsignor John J. Curran Lecture this Thursday, January 17th. It's a co-presentation by King's College and the Anthracite Heritage Foundation. The moderator is Robert Walensky, commentators Joe Husty and Bill Best, and that will be at the Burke Auditorium of the McGowan School of Business at King's College, corner of North River and West Union Streets in Wilkes-Barre, and that gets underway at 7 o'clock. These events are part of the Anthracite Mining Heritage Month, and events are taking place nearly every day through January 31st. There's a complete list online, and that's at the Anthracite Heritage Foundation, ahfdn.org, ahfdn.org. And for more information about Coal Breaker Communities, Faded Memories, and the reception, online at kings.edu, kings.edu. And again, the opening reception this Friday from 6 to 8 in the Widman Gallery at King's, and Sue Han presenting the annual Monsignor John J. Curran Lecture at the Burke Auditorium in the McGowan School of Business at King's College, getting underway at 7. There is no charge for any of the events.